Hey there, Dune fans. This is Adam O'Brien, the Legal Mullet, here on the Mullet Guild, a Dune fan podcast, and we're just about to get into episode number 8 of the show. Joining me tonight is, of course, Kyle Wagner of FPN, the co-founder, and of course, Culture Clash, Endzone, and many other podcasts. And from Waypodge, that is What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, Scott Bowman, both huge Dune fans. And of course, it is September 9 in the US, so that means we have had the launch of the Dune trailer. And of course, that's September 10 out of here. Let's get into it, folks. We're going to have this great look at this detailed trailer and our thoughts on it all here on the podcast.
Secret report from the Guild. The Mullet has the spice. The spice must flow. You must listen to the Mullet Guild.
Welcome to the Mullet Guild, a special look at Dune from Phantom Podcast Network's The Lethal Mullet. Find all about the Dune universe here on this podcast. This podcast is for people that have never read Dune and are going into the movie in December 18 this year. Find out all about the world, the planet Arrakis, the different schools, the Swordmasters, the Mentats, the Bene Gesserit, and of course the Navigators. Find out about the medical Sook doctors. Find out about the Atreides, House Carino, and House Harkonnen. All here on Phantom Podcast Network's The Mullet Guild, hosted by the Lethal Mullet.
Welcome to the Mullet Guild here live on FPN's The Lethal Mullet Podcast, here on the channel that gives you everything when it comes to geekdom, movies, football, with, you know, all the great stuff that, of course, Kevin Cole will give us in the end zone, Blood of Kings, all that sort of stuff. You find it all on FPN, but you can also find this show, The Mullet Guild, on there, celebrating the Dune universe. And we have a lot to celebrate tonight, folks, because it is Dune Day. That's right. The 3-minute trailer for the new Denis Villeneuve film has been released. And joining me today are two amazing Dune fans, dear friends, and of course, co-anchors here at, of course, FPN. And of course, we have our founder here as well. That is, of course, Kyle Wagner, co-founder of course, the FPN with Kevin Reitzel. And of course, Scott Bowman of Waypodge. That is What a Piece of Junk, the Star Wars podcast, here to celebrate Dune today. So first up, Kyle, mate, how are you?
I'm good, but I gotta ask, Adam, you told me we were taking an episode talking about worms. I really wasn't ready to go fishing yet.
Well, I tell you what, you need a bloody big fishing rod if you're gonna use that out there on Arrakis. And of course, Scott, mate, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Adam. I have suffered some damage to my house in real life, and there's a big hole in my roof right now, but nothing, and I mean nothing, can rain on my parade when it comes to the excitement I have for today's Dune trailer release. I've watched it 3 times, and I'm just going crazy over here with the anticipation. Is it December yet, and what do I have to do to get to watch this in a theater right now?
Wait, Scott, the hole in your house is so you can collect spice.
I told the insurance company it was damaged by a tree, but really it was the Shai Hulud.
Shai Hulud came through the ground and smashed through the roof.
Okay, and so my next question is this, gentlemen, before we dive in. Are we sure it's December?
Sure is a relative term in today's world in the year 2020.
Because there was no date on this trailer.
No, there's no date on that. And I think that's something to do with what Warner Brothers president was saying. And I mean, I think, God, Scott, we were probably talking about this months back when we did the show together. We were talking about, you know, if it does, you know, need more time, it's most likely probably February or March next year.
Yeah. So I'm still hopeful that December date is still the one.
Yeah, because then we get a real Star Wars film.
I hope the December date is still the one, because I think that's the ideal time. Because I was thinking about it. There's going to be one problem with Dune if it comes out in February. That's going to be awful close to another movie, which a lot of people might see as direct competition to Dune, and that's Marvel's The Eternals.
Oh, yeah. That's a big movie.
Now, this is, of course, assuming that Marvel hits their date.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think at least here in the States, I've been to the movie theater a couple times already, guys.
You're a braver man than I, Kyle.
Well, they were pretty much empty when I went there.
That's right. Now, folks, of course, if you have been to the movie theaters to see Christopher Nolan's Snorefest, Tenet, then you will see at the start of the film an amazing trailer, which was a teaser trailer. And, of course, we've had on the web a teaser to the teaser trailer and now a teaser to the trailer trailer. And the great thing about it, though, is at the end of the day, look, I will say, if you are going to go and see Tenet, enjoy it. It is a real meld of Memento in the way it's structured and, of course, Inception. It's that kind of thing. Well, folks, it seems I've lost Kyle and Scott, but we have somebody calling in. Could it be Christopher Nolan himself?
Oh, hi, Adam. I'm Christopher Nolan, and I just rewound myself to come back to the start of your podcast.
Well, this must be some kind of time loop, Christopher.
Hello?
That's right. I can go forward in time and back, and before you even started your question, Adam, did you know that? It's called a Tenet, and it is fantastic.
And, of course, it's got the gotcha ending. You know, all those ones have a gotcha ending. And a great chat I had with Mr. Kyle Wagner earlier in the week, we both came to the summons that he's kind of a little bit like Shyamalan, not as in the movie maker, but they're very much into their own gimmick, would you say, Kyle?
Yeah, I think, and that's the comparison. I think Nolan is a better director than M. Night Shyamalan, but I think he's on the verge very much of falling into his own trap of he has to make a movie, his movie's too Nolan, if you get what I mean there, Adam Scott.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, he has the big expectations to live up to his style.
Yes, yes. And I think he just needs to do what he does and go from there.
You know,
but speaking of people who have styles to live up to and carrying on, because I don't care much about Christopher Nolan, Denis Villeneuve has a style to live up to after Blade Runner 2049, doesn't he?
Oh, does he ever? And you think about it too, he really has knocked out, each has been a progression in succession. If you look right back to Sicario is probably the first one. Oh no, actually even Prisoners actually, with Jake Gyllenhaal and Hugh Jackman. So he did that small film, moved on to that next one, which was Sicario. So obviously this was all sort of setting him up to do films that are based on proper sets, you know, like live in the live world itself, not just in the movie studio. Then, of course, moved on to Arrival, which I think is the biggest, biggest close element when it comes to Dune, because the spaces that he used in that film, particularly on the interior of the alien spacecraft and stuff like that, and the tone. I think we're not looking at a film that's going to be fast-paced with Dune. I think we're going to have something more along the pace of Arrival. And then the epic scope of something like Blade Runner 2049, particularly in those Las Vegas scenes, don't you think, Scott? Yeah, so saying, don't you think this is going to be more akin to the 2049 where they had the Las Vegas scenes, where everything just basically opened up epic?
Yes, definitely. The shots in the trailer that stuck with me the most were those that showed the epic landscape. You know, mm-hmm. Paul and his mom and Zendaya out there in the desert. And then, of course, the closing scene of the trailer where the Shai-Hulud, the sandworm, is coming toward them as they're running toward the rocks. All those wide panoramic shots that just made the idea of such an expansive and huge desert really, really hit home. And to show our human characters as being so tiny, both visually and physically, as well as metaphorically.
Yes, yes. Oh, you know,
I'd just like to interject you. I got a lot of a feeling of a lot of the film work he did in Arrival as well.
Oh, yeah, big time. And I think too the pace. Like, I think the biggest thing is, you know, the success of Dune is going to be based on the editing of this movie as well as obviously the look and everything like that. It's something we'll get into very soon. Is, you know, expectations coming from a trailer to a movie are different. You know, that's one thing that we've seen. Phantom Menace is probably a pretty good depiction of that.
yes, definitely.
But before we get into that, quickly, going to jump to contacts for you guys.
Thank you for checking out The Mullet Guild on the Phantom Podcast Network. You can subscribe to the show at fpnet.podbean.com. That's the master feed where you'll find all the shows on the network. You can also follow me, The Lethal Mullet, at The Lethal Mullet on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
So, of course, if you want to listen to this show and check out all the other shows, obviously this is the 8th episode, so you can go look at some of the older episodes of this, over at FPN, that's of course Phantom Podcast Network, on Podbean. Now, the best way to do that is actually to grab the app from the App Store or from Google Play, download it, and then once you've downloaded it, you can actually go on there and look for this show. You can actually look for FPN itself and check out all the other shows. Subscribe to them, folks, and once you've done that, you get this show, you get Waypodge, look at all the stuff that Scott, of course, Derek do with Star Wars. You get Blood of Kings, Highlander podcast, really informative show, looking at, of course, Highlander with, of course, Kevin and Lee. And, of course, Culture Clash with Kevin and Kyle, looking at all the latest movie news, comics, you know, merchandise. They cover everything on there. All the way through to, of course, Union Fed, looking at Star Trek, Type 40, looking at Doctor Who, and, of course, Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, looking at a deep dive into, of course, Star Trek fandom with myself as co-host, and, of course, our dear pal, Mark Newbold, over there in London across the pond, and, of course, James Semple occasionally as well. But, of course, you can catch The Lethal Mullet, a celebration of 80s action cinema on there, as well as, of course, this show, The Mullet Guild. And the other place to check that also is at fbnet.podbean.com. You'd also catch myself, The Lethal Mullet, where I post socially on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at The Lethal Mullet. Now, boys, where can we find you on the web, Kyle?
Of course, you can find me all across the Fandom Podcast Network. As for myself personally, you can find me on Twitter at AKyleW or on Instagram at AKyleFandom.
Awesome. And Scott, where can we find you, mate?
Sure. I'm on Twitter as at ScotticusMax. I'm on Facebook under my real name, Scott Bautman. And you can find my author website where I do my own science fiction novels at writegreatscott.com.
Dude, that is an awesome Twitter name, ScotticusMax. That is freaking amazing.
Yeah, I got to give credit to one of my former fellow reporters at a newspaper where I worked years ago. He just started calling me that because I had been pontificating about Roman society.
Oh, nice. You know, it kind of like the minute I saw that Twitter name, it kind of recalls times in Generation 1. We go, Optimus, we need a new Prime. That's okay. We have Scotticus Max.
That would be awesome. Now I need to do a custom Transformer build for that. Great idea.
Oh, we have to do it. We have to do it.
What spicy news do you have for us here at Siege Quinlan?
Nice. All the way from Siege Quinlan. Well, I tell you what, I've got some news for you. All the way from Arakeen. All right. So before we get into looking at the trailer, I thought we'd do it a bit of a dive ourselves into... we've probably talked about this before, but it's an interesting thing to seeing where your Dune fandoms come from and where it is now. So we'll start with you, Scott. Where did you first catch up with Dune? Was it the original novel? Was it the movie with Lynch? Or what was it that sparked it?
For me, it was definitely the Lynch film. One of my grandparents bought me a toy from the Lynch film, thinking it was a Star Wars toy, because of course I was big into Star Wars, and that led me to be like, well, wait, what is this? And then after I got that toy, a little while later, you know, they did the broadcast television premiere of like the basically miniseries for Dune from Lynch, and oh man, it was amazing. It was like taking my Star Wars fandom to the next level, you know. Very much grown up, weird, out there, hard sci-fi kind of thing. And of course, once I found out that it was a book, I had to go read the book. So Lynch film actually Dune toy first, then the Lynch film, then the novels.
Did they have that battle action or battle posable action sort of element to the LJN toy? So you'd press a button and the arms would move, and so the Fremen would...
Yeah, they had like the mechanical operations, you know. Back in the 80s, we had toys that had all these physical engines and whatnot in them. Like, mm-hmm. you had Hot Wheels cars that you could rev up, but not with, you didn't wind them up. You took them and you had that gravity wheel where you just spun them, and then you let it go and it fly off, you know? Right? Yeah. And then same deal with some of the Dune toys. They had those, the swivel hips and the judo chop action, you know? And Chris Blades out the wazoo.
I loved it. I found it. It's called Battle-matic. There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yep. It's like those Chuck Norris toys. Remember Chuck Norris's Karate Commandos? And they had that the thing where,
yep.
hey-ya! Like, it was a little chop on the side. They had everything set out a little bit like, I think it was an earlier version of not He-Man, but a knockoff brand where they had the kicking legs.
Yeah. I don't remember which toy that was, but I remember what you're talking about. You'd squeeze the torso, and their legs would be all chop, 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 chop.
It was great. Kyle, where did you get your little fandom of Dune first?
Honestly, I think the first time I ever got experience with Dune was actually the original film. And then after seeing that film, was recommended to go read the book, which I did. And then, you know what really kind of sold me on it, though, was the Sci-Fi Channel miniseries back in the day, which... until this movie comes out, we'll go down as the best on-screen adaptation of Dune.
Oh, yeah. It was good.
Oh, 100%. I think the first one I saw, this is my Dune fandom, folks, was the TV version. So the what is it, 3-hour cut, whatever it is, it's labeled as. And this is the one that Lynch disowns. He says, you know, it's not the one he would have done. It is pretty bad because there's parts where there's obviously deleted scenes that don't quite match up, where Duke Leto is doing that scene with, it was meant to be with Stilgar, but he has it with the planetologist, Kynes, Dr. Kynes. And he does that thing where he turns the water upside down and, Kynes has spat on the ground and said he's giving his water in respect or whatever like this. And then it sort of cuts to a scene where Duke Leto goes, "You don't know what to do. Get out there and look for the spice." But it's the way he does it. It's not in the scene. I'm like, whoa. Okay, I know this is the Alan Smithy cut. Like, you know, I know this is not the right one, but that obviously is not a scene that's meant to be in that part, you know. And unfortunately, it's the actor that played Duke Leto is kind of, he's left with a lot of these scenes that really weren't in the part, but whoever's edited together does not know the novel. You know, they're great scenes by themselves, but it's the intensity of that performance. But anyway, yeah, that's where I picked up my first look at Dune. You know, I didn't get to see the theatrical version until probably around about 2006. So for whatever it was, 16 years that I knew of Dune or whatever it was that Alan Smithy cut. Got into the novels, and the novel, the first one I had the actual cover from the Lynch film. So the poster with the two moons of Muad'Dib, and of course, setting out everything ready to rock and roll. So it's one that really set me on my path. And of course, I've become a huge fan of Dune since then and got into the later novels by Kevin J. Anderson and Brian Herbert. Become good pals with both of them, which is really something that was, at the end of the day, something I didn't expect. And to see their side of things, see that they're fans just like us, and able to see Brian, in particular, be able to find a safety deposit box of his own father years after he passed away with all this information for Dune 7, which, of course, was Hunters and Sandworms of Dune. And just to see where this whole arc of the six books that Frank wrote, where it went, and, of course, that went to where it was, and who the real Kwisatz Haderach is. And if you don't know, folks, then let's just say water may have something to do with it. I won't say any more. Well, in a role other than the role of the Han Solo of Dune. I will say that. But yes, it's great to see we've all had sort of an inlet through the Lynch film. But I digress. Time to get into, of course, the Spice Bar. I'm sitting here waiting, contemplating what's the best day. Watching that new movie, I'm the leader, moment. Wow, I'm the leader. Wow, I'm the leader. Oh, I'm the leader. Moment. Rightio, time to go down to the pub. Have myself a spice beer. Like a Pilsner. Pilsner is pretty good. Could be a little bit of, you know,
pale ale, a bit of pale spice ale. It's good stuff too, mate. Let's get into it.
Folks, we're going to go into this bar and we're going to chat about the trailer. Denis Villeneuve's film. Let's get into it. All right, we're going to start. Kyle, your immediate thoughts on the film. Trailer. Go for it.
The trailer itself matched and surpassed all my expectations of it visually. I had no doubt of the visual, and that's what this trailer is meant to do, to sell you on all the visual, and it sold me 100% as far as that goes. I love this. I think you see just enough of, look, of most of your major players in this, so you have an idea of who's in it, especially for people who aren't familiar with Dune, where this movie is going to be their first real exposure to Dune. And I think the fact that you get to see Oscar Isaac, you see Timothée Chalamet, you see Rebecca Ferguson, you see Zendaya, you see Jason Momoa, which I think is a huge thing for selling it to, being able to take your girlfriends or wives to go see Dune with you.
word up.
But no, I think it sets the world, and this is more than either of the David Lynch Dune film or even the miniseries. This really, to me, felt like this is what I pictured in my head when I read the book. It was the look of this. There's a darkness to it, but there's this real brightness as well. And I think for me, the big thing with this trailer is it does what it needs to do to sell the visual. Of course, I think the biggest obstacle for Dune is translating the story to the big screen. And that's something I think that is the hardest part of Dune.
100%.
I have confidence in Denny, but that's still the big aspect of Dune for me that we're not going to know until the movie actually comes out.
You've nailed it. I mean, that is the toughest thing, is that this is one of those novels that has multiple plots intertwining, and in such a way that when you read it, you read different meanings and different stories itself into the book. Scott, what's your immediate thoughts, mate?
So the graphics, the looks of it were great. It had that, the way it was shot, definitely fulfilled that need for scope for me. Like we were talking a few months ago about how this is a big movie. This is a big story. I need big wide angle shots. And Denis Villeneuve and the crew there have not let me down on my need for that way of looking at the film. I think for me, the best two things about it were the personal defense shields. That special effect looks great.
Yes.
It's unique, but it doesn't detract from the scene. And then let's talk about Dave Bautista for a second here.
Oh, yeah.
As the Beast. Oh, man, as the Beast, he looks utterly alien in the picture we get of him from the trailer. You know, the characters in Dune, they are humans, but they're so far removed from us along the evolutionary and time scale that sometimes we forget they're essentially aliens to us. But the way they've done up Bautista here as the Beast, he looks utterly alien and just feral. I mean, that one tiny half a second shot of Skarsgård as the Baron saying, "Destroy them," and then cutting to Bautista, he's just like, well, okay, if there's anybody in this movie that can destroy Josh Brolin and friends, it's Bautista.
Oh, it is. It is. And I got to say, I like the look of the Harkonnen. It's a very alien look. Giedi Prime, the planet that the Harkonnen come from, obviously is very lack of the sun. One of the things that they're doing is they're making their a sort of an anemic white quality to their skin where they can't even grow hair. So this bald look. And it's alien enough and menacing enough. One thing they always said that Giedi Prime looks like hell. You know, it's this sort of, you know, mechanized, yes, definitely, but industrial hell. And I could definitely see that. One of the things that's interesting is they use that visual, kind of a cliche when you look at it, is the Baron coming through mud, you know, dirt, grime. And it straight away, it's a visual metaphor for evil, you know.
Well, it reminds me of Armus, the black tar alien on Star Trek The Next Generation that kills Tashi Yar, right?
Oh, which
was the same idea, you know? Mm-hmm. It's a personification of evil. Evil is this horrible thing that just like coats us and steeps into our pores. And if there's any society that illustrates that is the Giddy Prime, the Harkonnens in Dune, and then having this version of the Baron. You know, you look at the atmosphere of their planet. Like you said, yes. the sunlight is just not there. So they're cloaked in darkness. So they had to turn to artifice and mechanics to overcome that. So it's a little bit drawing on the symbolism from the Lord of the Rings when Saruman turns over to the dark side and cuts down the forest and mechanizes everything to create the Uruk-hai and all that stuff at Isengard.
It truly is.
If I can interject here one second too. One of the things that I really like about the way they make the Harkonnen look and
just
Harkonnen the Baron.
Just lost you there, Kyle. Sorry.
Still, yeah. Just that the Harkonnen, I think he made the Baron too grotesque in mm-hmm. in his version of the film. And I think Danny is from the look of
I mean it's
yeah, I think for me, Kyle, it was always the Baron was too gross in the Lynch film.
Yes.
And in this he's repulsive, but not totally unwatchable.
Yeah. It's kind of, I think, look, you nailed it. Both of you nailed it. It's a very theatrical version, if anything, and those. And I think what we're getting is back down to the essence of the character. I mean, the reports are in this one, he's not going to be floating around on little jets of air like the other ones.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing, too, because I think that's one of the things that you can get away with in Dune if you're not careful, is getting too caught up in making it almost, especially with the Harkonnen, a little too over the top mm-hmm. with little things in that with the Harkonnen. And I think that was always one of Lynch's biggest issues in his film was that, and I think even at times the Sci-Fi Channel miniseries in its own unique 80s way, especially that late 80s, early 90s way, went over the top with the Harkonnen too. I like what the aspect we're seeing, at least in this trailer from the Harkonnen, that maybe they're going to be a little bit more. Yes, they have the mechanical aspect, but there's still a primal evil to them, like Scott was talking about.
Oh, without a doubt. And I think that's just some of those elements that really, at the end of the day, come back to give us what we need, you know, which is that visual representation from the novels, you know. And I think, you know, here's my feelings, folks. You know, I look back on it. The first thing on this novel that I always, it was the envisioning of a round worm. And they got it in this one. And, you know, what I'm talking about is the mouth. Perfectly symmetrical. Just filled with those teeth that were going to become crest knives. There you go, folks. It's a bit of a spoiler for you. But just the scale. The absolute scale of this thing. You know, and Scotty and Kyle, you've nailed it. The scale is on a whole other zone. Now, dear pal of ours from Rebel Force Radio, Paul Bateman, constantly he and I are chatting offline just about, you know, the scale of Dune, because obviously he's a little bit more in the know, being part of obviously the inner circle of a lot of those concept artists and stuff that have worked on Dune. And, you know, he said, look, Adam, you're looking too small. It's too small for what you're looking at. Like, you're right, you're looking at the Lynch movie, you're looking at the miniseries. It's far bigger than that. I'm like, really? It can't be that much bigger, surely. But he's right. No, it is much, much bigger. So every time I've looked at it, I couldn't get quite what they were coming up with. And now you see it in front of you. The Caladan itself has this epic scope that I would never imagine it had. Children of Dune kind of gave us that. I mean, Scotty, you'd remember that, where they go to there, where, of course, Lady Jessica's there still with, of course, Gurney Halleck. And we get that nice thing in the miniseries. That's kind of giving us a bit of scope, but obviously not the budget. But you know, now we're getting it with the set on Norway. But the minute they go to Arrakis, you know, they're just the scale, the huge. I mean, these are real sets. And that's what really gets me. You wouldn't get this with a Disney production. Not to bag Disney, you know, like they've moved more towards CGI for a lot of their stuff, Star Wars included. But, you know, there's a certain ethereal quality to having something right in front of you, right there. And there's very little CGI apart from when they go out into the desert and obviously the ornithopters and stuff like that in this Dune movie. And of course, the great effect that they're doing, as you mentioned earlier, on, of course, the fight scene with the training scene, that is, with our hero now, of course, Paul Atreides, and of course, his teacher, Gurney Halleck. And this is exactly straight. I mean, the vision's coming from the novel, Kyle.
Yeah, I loved how the shields looked on this, and I'm glad you brought this up because there's something I want to address real quick. I know we don't have a ton of time here, but one of my biggest concerns with this film was the casting of Timothy Chalamet as Paul Atreides. I just wasn't sure if he could pull it off, but from the look in the trailer and what we see of him in the trailer, I have more confidence now than what I initially thought. I don't know what your thoughts about his casting as Paul Atreides were, Scott.
I wasn't too familiar with the young man until this was announced, so I didn't have a lot of preconceived notions about him, but seeing him in this trailer, he nails it. I mean, it definitely feels different than Kyle MacLachlan, because Kyle always seemed to be a little bit older than what my mental image of Paul was later in life when I read the novels. He seemed to have a portrayal in the novels of being a younger, you know, like 19, 20 years old, whereas I thought MacLachlan's portrayal was more like, I don't know, 24, 25. But Chalamet definitely looks like he just got out of high school, you know, or just finished with military academy or whatever. And frankly, he looks like Kylo Ren if he, you know, didn't go the Force way and instead went the Spice way. And I think that's fine. I think it's going to be great.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Stop the press, folks. I have an announcement to make. And, of course, this is for Lethal Mullet fans. You're going to love this. Literally about 5 minutes ago, a post from episode number 66, the Shokasugi special, just got not only liked but checked and watched by the one, the only, the director of some of the biggest films, American Ninja. Folks, that is Sam Furstenberg. Folks,
whoa,
the canon very director. Nice. That's right. I've already sent out a friend request already too, and hopefully we'll be able to get him to follow on, of course. The great Little Mullet stuff that we do there too. And of course, you know, he's got his own book out now too. Furstenberg directed Revenge of the Ninja and then went on to, of course, do the great stuff with Michael Dudikoff. As they say in the documentary, Electric Boogaloo, get to Dudikoff, get to Dudikoff. This is great. This is fantastic. And that's what we want to do. We want to celebrate the extreme hard work that the guys did at Canon Films, because they really did do, with no budget, as hard as they could for Menahem Golem, as much as they could, or the Golden Globus, you know, at the end of the day too. So, but anyway, getting back to it. All right, obviously, we've seen the Harkonnen folks. We've seen the Atreides. We've seen the Worms. And we now have seen the Fremen. Of course, Stilgar, Chaney, and of course, now we're really seeing their world. What do you think of it, Kyle?
I think, you know, the Fremen have been the one thing I feel like has been nailed in every aspect of Dune by the look of them and how they would come across. And I think that's been one thing traditionally that stayed through every translation of Dune. And it's no different here. They look like how I would picture them in my head. Obviously, we have Zendaya and Stilgar. And, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing how their religion and how things are played out with the Fremen in this version of Dune. Because again, I think this is going to be probably the truest translation to Dune we've ever had, knowing what Danny is doing. And the fact that, remember, this is only part one of two. So this is, I'm just really looking forward to the translation. I think the Fremen have the most to benefit from that.
Oh, hell yes. Scott, do you reckon this is going to really, you know, fulfill right up to a sort of cliffhanger after he's just met Stilgar?
I thought that that's a great question as to where the cliffhanger is going to be. We know we're going to get one. There was a lot more Zendaya in this trailer than I was expecting, based on the rumors I've heard behind the scenes about when the cliffhanger happens in part one. I thought it was mostly going to be after his dad has been killed, spoiler alert, and, you know, he and his mom are running through the desert and they meet up with the Fremen, and I thought that was going to be sort of it. But maybe the stuff that we've seen with Zendaya as Chani in the trailer, a lot of it is from his dream. I love that they're leaning hard into Paul dreams the future.
Yes.
I felt that sometimes in Lynch's film, we didn't get enough of Paul's clairvoyance, you know, in the early parts of the story. But I like, another thing I really like from the trailer was the scenes with the ornithopter, and then the scene where Gurney and Paul are, you know, on the skid as they're watching the Shai-Hulud eat the stuff in the desert below. I think that just looks awesome. I can't wait to see more of that scene on the big screen.
Oh, it's going to be huge. One of the things I think, too, is that will be the real epic moment. Like, obviously, I think that's going to be halfway through the film, a little bit like the miniseries did in the pilot, and, of course, the Lynch movie as well. It's the chance where we meet, of course, Dr. Kynes. We get to see, obviously, a little bit of the Fremen. We get to see the still suits for the first time. And I think this is the first time we'll see the Thopters in action. Now, it's interesting. They're kind of looking like a cross between a Cobra gunship and a flapping winged version also of, you know, the Apache helicopter too. So it's interesting what they've done. But I must say, at the end of the day, I think visually it has nailed it. And so let's just hope December, folks, it comes around. So before we wrap, though, I must say, myself, I'm pumped. I can't wait to see more. I do believe we're going to get a Harkonnen trailer soon in the next couple of months. It's been rumored. So we'll get to see Geaty Prime and a little bit behind that too. But before we wrap, Kyle, your thoughts on where we're going to go before December?
I think we have some questions that still need to be answered. Are we for sure on December? I think we're going to get a lot more Dune now that this trailer is out. I think this is going to kind of start the gates being opened. I think the big key is the announcement of when they're actually, if this is maintaining its December 17th date or if it's moving, it's getting moved. I do think if I'm Dune right now in the marketers, I start making trailers that focus on each house. Like you said, a Harkonnen trailer, I would love to see an Atreides, something focusing on the Atreides family. They're, you know, covering, using a trailer to cover each aspect of Dune so that people can get educated about Dune.
Oh, yeah, big time. Scott, where do you reckon we're going to go before December?
Yeah, I like that idea of each house, each faction gets its own trailer. As I could see a Fremen trailer, a Harkonnen trailer, a Atreides trailer, a Sisterhood trailer, etc. But, you know, one thing we didn't see in the trailer at all was the Navigators. What do the members of the Navigator Guild look like in this version of the universe? What are, you know, is it going to be a big floaty brain guy in a tank? Is it going to be a guy with the, you know, a whole different look? Is it going to be super cybernetic looking guy? I don't know. So that's the space travel aspect was not touched on much except for a few passing shots of, you know, some aircraft dropping people off or picking people up when it comes to a troop transport, you know.
Yeah, I think I just want to indicate there. I think that's going to be a secret till the movie comes out.
I think so too. Look, I don't know. Denis Villeneuve is so literal on the book, and we don't really get a description of the book. We just get that they're mutated, and you know that you kind of no one really has seen them before. Really, it's a chance for Frank to say, I don't know what they look like. You know, like, but at the end of the day, what I think is interesting, he's going to be probably a little bit more literal, just talk about it, and we may not see it. But I tell you what you will see is Spacing Guild representatives. You'll see that because, of course, the banquet scene is in this adaptation. So we'll see that. You do see in the trailer the Bene Gesserit landing, and I think it's landing on Caladan. So you get to see, look, these ships are huge. I mean, they're massive. So how big are the Highliners in this movie? That's another question I have too. But that's a question for another time, folks, because we're going to look at that later in the next couple months and, of course, the next coming weeks of the Mullet Guild. I want to thank my co-hosts tonight, Kyle Wagner and, of course, Scott Bowman for being on the show. Thanks, fellas.
Thanks, Adam. We got worm sign. We got worm sign.
Lots and lots of worm sign. I am excited. I think a lot of people are. I think we're going to have a bigger introduction to Dune for a general populace than we've ever had before.
That's right. And, of course, folks, we're waiting for the big announcement of who's playing Emperor Shaddam the Fourth. And I have it on good word that it's Christopher Walken who says, where is my spice? I need it on Carino Capital now, not later. Come on, Atreides, help me now. There you go, a little bit of a spoiler, folks. We'll catch you next time on The Mullet Guild, episode 9. next Thursday. Catch you then. Thank you so much for listening.
That's all we have time for here tonight on The Mullet Guild, brought to you by Phantom Podcast Network's The Lethal Mullet Podcast, brought to you live by CH Quinlan. And we'll be back with more spicy news and spicy details from Frank Herbert's Dune Universe, all here on Thursdays on, of course, the Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to check it out at the master feed of fbnet.podbean.com or your podcatcher of choice. Check it out and also follow us at The Lethal Mullet on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram for more news, more awesomeness and more pop culture for you, the listener of the show. And we'll catch you next week. Until then, good afternoon, good evening and good night. And make sure you check out the trailer soon of Dune. We'll catch you next time here on The Mullet Guild.
All voices on this podcast were from a mentor order. No worms were harmed in the production of this podcast.